We're asking about environmental concerns with Canadian oil firm Enbridge Energy. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Recent reports indicate Enbridge stayed mum over a year on a spill involving its Southern Lights pipeline that runs through Wisconsin and Minnesota, delivering petroleum products to Canada. And meanwhile, one state over, Michigan, is giving Enbridge until May 12th to shut down Line 5 that runs from Superior. What questions do you have about Enbridge and how it operates its pipelines through Wisconsin? Do you live in or near Fort Atkinson? What concerns do you have about the Line 13 spill? 800-642-1234. Laura Schulte is a government agency and state government reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Laura, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Well, explain, first of all, what does pipeline Line 13 carry?
So Line 13 carries diluent, which is used to dilute heavier oils to make them easier to transport through other pipelines.
Okay, and so is that specifically that product and nothing else? Or, you know, does it carry a different products as well?
Nope, it specifically carries petroleum diluent. It transports about 180,000 barrels a day.
And where does this pipeline go? Where does it lead to?
Yeah, it starts in Manhattan, Illinois, runs through Wisconsin and Minnesota, delivering products to Enbridge's Edmonton terminal in Alberta, Canada.
And how long has Line 13 been in existence? Is this an older pipeline?
I actually don't know how many years it has been there for sure, but it's been there for at least the last 10 years, if not longer.
How is it regulated? How is this pipeline and others like it regulated by the federal government?
I don't have that right in front of me right now.
Sure. But so the U.S. Department of Transportation, it regulates pipelines like this. And in going back to 2019, there was this spill. What happened in 2019?
Yeah, so in 2019, a whistle alarm went off for the company, notifying them of a spill. They went out and they looked at the site near Fort Atkinson and realized that the leak was coming from a faulty elbow joint on the pipe there. May 17th, the leak was identified after the whistle alarm was triggered on April 26th in 2019. And then the valve was replaced on June 2nd. The company, excavated the site and tested soil and nearby wells for contamination. But the leak wasn't reported to the DNR until July 31st, 2020, over a year after the spill occurred. In November of 2020, the company reached the conclusion that 29 to 33 barrels of diluent were released to the ground. The company says they waited so long to report the spill because they were unsure of how much of the substance had been released into the ground. At first, they thought it could have been less than 5 gallons, which triggers the need for a report in the state of Wisconsin.
So Enbridge basically said, look, we don't have all the information here, so we won't report it until we understand more clearly what the leak entailed?
Basically, that's what happened.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the 2019 Enbridge pipeline spill near Fort Atkinson. We have Laura Schulte. She's a reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Do you live in or near Fort Atkinson? What concerns do you have about the Line 13 spill and how it unfolded? Do you support or oppose the Enbridge pipeline in this area? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Laura, what is a typical timeline for reporting a spill like this?
So when I talk to the DNR, the agency wants spills to be reported right away, but it's not uncommon for them to be a delay for there to be a delay in reporting until more is known about how much spilled and, what the product could do in the environment. But Enbridge has insisted that they've been proactive about, meeting with the agency and informing them about the spill.
And so the Enbridge also basically sent their findings to the DNR in January. And what was the response from the DNR on this report?
So the DNR is telling Enbridge that they need to do some more soil testing around the site of the leak there. They want them to remove some more soils in the area and also test all of the potable water wells, the drinking water wells, within about 1,200 feet of the leak, and also assess the vapor risk within the buildings on the site. So those would probably be, you know, more industrial buildings in that area, you know, related to the Enbridge operation, or maybe some farming buildings.
When you say farming buildings, are there private residents who may have wells compromised here?
There are wells within 1,200 feet of the leak, which the DNR have asked to be assessed. I haven't seen any data come back on that yet.
So no data there. What is the timeline for doing these tests, and how the test results will be reported to the public?
Yeah, so the DNR has directed that Enbridge submit a plan for additional investigation be submitted by March 31st, or within 60 days of March 31st. I know that there is already testing underway by the company. And so when those results are submitted to the DNR, they'll be analyzed and they will be put online for the public to take a look at that point.
Well, let's bring in Nancy now in Wausau with comments on Enbridge. Nancy, go ahead.
It's more of an observation than an actual question, but Laura, I'm wondering if you have heard anything. I have some friends way up north that are kind of fighting all this with Enbridge, and they are finding that Enbridge throws money at a lot of these small towns, trying to help them out to kind of maybe, I'd call it hush money, to make themselves look good and keep down the talk against them.
Nancy, thanks. So Nancy is saying that Enbridge makes investments in the smaller communities, specifically in northern Wisconsin, in order to, you know, have a better profile, if you will, in the area. Laura, what is your take on that?
I have heard of Enbridge, you know, investing in the communities that their pipelines run through. When I talked to some residents that live near the Fort Atkinson area, they mentioned that, you know, Enbridge has made donations to their town in the past, made donations to their volunteer fire department for new equipment. So I know that is a practice that they do have.
Okay, let's bring in Ronnie now in Jefferson. Ronnie, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm calling in from not real far away from this leak. I've been working on organizing our citizens against this pipeline, and I also do a lot of work on pipeline safety in this area. So this is no surprise that this happened. It's kind of just been something we've been more or less waiting for that was going to happen in this area. This is a real problem. We have four pipelines here, and this one was built in 2007, so it's relatively new. We have some that are as old as 50 years old here. So it's a concern for everybody. So these are as close to homes as some people step off their porch, walk a few feet, and they're on the pipeline corridor. Mm.
Ronnie, when you look at your activism as a citizen activist, organizing your friends, your neighbors, what do you want to see happen?
I would like to see Enbridge step up and take responsibility for some safety in this area. It's great that they donate some money to the fire departments and whatnot here, but we need more than this. Our citizens need to be educated when to call, what to call 911 for. There really should almost be a fire drill every year for these people. I also think that they need to be a lot more generous to the fire department. Equipment is great, but we're short of people. We have a lot of volunteer fire departments. We just do not have the personnel here during the day. Should we have a really major leak, this was kind of a clarion call that we really need to be prepared in case we should get a large leak.
Ronnie, thank you for bringing your perspective on Canada's largest transporter of crude oil right there in Ronnie and her neighbor's backyard as we talk with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel government agency reporter Laura Schulte in giving us an update on Enbridge developments in our state. Are you worried about contaminated soil and groundwater from an Enbridge pipeline leak? What information do you seek from Enbridge and regulatory authorities on how pipelines are monitored and leaks are dealt with? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Laura Schulte here on the Ideas Network. You're with us as we discuss Canadian oil firm Enbridge Energy and how pipeline leaks are disclosed, how they're dealt with, what the remediation process entails. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Enbridge waited more than 15 months to tell the state DNR of a pipeline leak in the south central part of our state near Fort Atkinson. According to the Enbridge Interim Action and Site Investigation report submitted to the DNR in January, more than 1,200 gallons of petroleum products spilled from this leak in 2019, and the DNR has ordered an additional investigation, as we've been talking about. What do you want to come of it? And remediation, what do you think of Enbridge's safety record for its pipelines? What should be done to safely transport oil and other products across Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. We have Milwaukee Journal Sentinel government agency reporter Laura Schulte, who stays with us. So, Laura, can you share with us how residents in and around Fort Atkinson are reacting to the delay in reporting this spill?
Yeah, residents are really concerned. You know, they're concerned not only about the fact that it took so long to report this spill, but they're really concerned about the fact that, you know, they were never notified about this spill. It took this long. You know, the spill happened in 2019, and just now Enbridge is being, you know, mandated to test wells within 1,200 feet of the area of the spill. They're really worried about the safety of their water, you know, if there are going to be any health effects if, you know, any pollution is found in their drinking water wells.
Has the DNR considered taking any action against Enbridge for this reporting delay or the slowdown here in its ability to say anything about this leak?
You know, at this point, nobody that I've spoken with at the DNR has indicated that there will be any action taken against the company. The DNR is working closely with Enbridge to design a remediation plan and to get more testing underway to figure out, you know, how far, you know, the diluent in this situation, moved through the ground if the groundwater, the water table were impacted by the spill.
And Jim from Juneau along those lines wants to know, how dissolvable is the diluent, the spill liquid in this case?
From my understanding, it can be easily transported by water. Another concern with the diluent is, you know, vapor intrusion, as I mentioned, you know. So, you know, kind of evaporation taking place of that and, you know, those fumes getting into nearby buildings and causing an issue.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Laura Schulte, who is government agency and state government reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking about Canada's largest transporter of crude oil and Line 13, which had a leak in 2019, with a lot more knowledge coming into the fore here just this year about this leak in and around Fort Atkinson. You can join in 800-642-1234. Cheryl is joining us from Spencer. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say I actually live right next to the Enbridge pipeline, and as a retired dairy farmer, they have been very responsible. They fly helicopters over the pipeline several times a year looking for leaks. We've never had problems with them. And on the other side of my house is the railroad tracks, and several times a day, the tanker trucks go past there, or tanker cars full of oil. Crude oil, I think, is always going south. And I'd like to remind people that 25 years ago, the train exploded in Waiawiga, and people were not able to go back home for over a month. And I just think Enbridge has been very responsible, and if we shut down their pipelines, you're going to have to keep in mind that there's going to be a lot more traffic on the rails and on the roads, and in my opinion, that's a lot more potential for danger. Those are my comments.
Yeah, so Cheryl sees the shifting risk there, Laura, and finding that Enbridge has been a good steward, has been diligent about checking that pipeline.
Yeah, and I think I've talked to people who, and I've heard from people who are very supportive of the pipeline and see it as a safer way to transport oil and different petroleum products. But there's also a converse side where people are wondering how relevant are pipelines, and especially new pipelines, in this day and age when a lot more focus seems to be being placed on green energy alternatives to oil.
Robert is joining us now from Decorah, Iowa. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Yeah. The question I have is that the aquifer that that feeds down to Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, and the other southern states get their main water from the northern states like Minnesota and Wisconsin. Is there going to be any monitoring of this?
So monitoring of the aquifers. Robert, thank you. Laura, what do you know on that front?
Like I said, the DNR has requested testing be done, on the groundwater in that area to see, if anything got into the water table there. So I know that, testing and monitoring is underway. The DNR has requested that some wells be put in to monitor what's happening in the ground around the spill site.
When do you expect more data to come out?
So Enbridge has 60 days, a little bit less than 60 days now to, come up with their testing plan, their action plan for what was requested by the DNR. Like I said, some of that testing is already underway, but we should see some of those results starting to come back, within the next couple of months.
Before we go, I want to shift to Line 5, going to the northern part of our state. This is the pipeline that starts in Superior, runs through Michigan, then to Canada. Michigan's governor has told Enbridge that this line has to be shut down mid-May next month. What concerns are coming from Michigan?
Yeah, so, the governor is very concerned about the pipeline there. So the pipeline runs the Straits of Mackinac, and there have been some issues with the footings of the pipe there in the water. And if a leak were to occur there, it could be, very detrimental to Lake Michigan, to those bodies of water that people really depend upon in this area. Line 5 carries transportation fuels, fuels used to heat homes, schools, and businesses. That product, drives industry in Wisconsin, the larger Midwest region, and eastern Canada. But people are very concerned over the risk that it would have to water quality.
And that is also playing out in Minnesota with Line 3, the controversial tar sands pipeline project that crosses under the Mississippi River. So another environmentally sensitive area. There have been anti-pipeline protests of Enbridge there. Is this basically about the environment and concerns around, the environment and what Enbridge can do to make sure that these pipelines don't leak?
Yeah, the biggest concern here is, over spills and, what damage spills can do to the environment and how it will impact the people who depend on the land where these pipelines run. Those are the really big concerns, and people really want to know that, the ground that they use for their crops and the water that they drink is going to be safe to continue use long into the future.
So when these pipelines need to be replaced because they're old or rerouted because they're going under a sensitive area, what has been Enbridge's response? What is this huge multinational's response to what people are saying in these parts?
Yeah, so with Line 5, there in the works of, you know, rerouting Line 5 right now in northern Wisconsin. They originally had some easements running through the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa reservation land. Those easements expired, so they're trying to reroute. You know, originally they were talking about using, you know, taking land from owners up there, but they've been able to work out a route where they have come to agreement with landowners. People are just concerned about having it near them, but the company insists, and, you know, we still do depend a lot on oil for transportation, for heating our homes and making our industries run.
Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the time.
Laura Schulte is a government agency and state government reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up, we discuss President Biden's roughly $2 trillion infrastructure package with U.S. Representative Gwen Moore is here. What questions do you have about what the Biden administration is proposing to rebuild our nation's infrastructure? How do you see it benefiting Wisconsin? We'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Negotiations over President Biden's roughly $2 trillion infrastructure package are underway on Capitol Hill. It's designed to fix crumbling roads, bridges. It would address Milwaukee's lead pipe crisis, replacing lead pipes and service lines nationwide. Here's Biden on the American Jobs Plan last week.
Ask a teacher or a childcare worker if having clean drinking water, non-contaminated drinking water in our schools and our child care centers is part of that foundation, when we know that the lead in our pipes slows a child's development when they drink that water.
What do you think about the infrastructure plan? What initiatives do you support? 800-642-1234. Gwen Moore is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District encompassing Milwaukee. Congresswoman Moore, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Before we dive deep into the infrastructure plan, I'm wondering if you would like to take a moment to reflect on the police shooting of 20-year-old Dante Wright in a traffic stop in Brooklyn Center Sunday.
What an absolute heartbreak. For everyone involved, and I just want to take this opportunity to, you know, really extend my sympathy not only to Dante's family, but, you know, to all of us who are grieving over the police community relationship. I think when people talk about abolishing the police or defunding the police, this is exactly the kind of scenario that they are objecting to. Traffic stops are very, very dangerous for black people. And when you stop and think about it, someone's taillight being busted or expired plates, there might be another way to enforce those laws rather than having these very dangerous stops. And so I think that, you know, it seems to me just at first blush that it was an accident. It was a lapse. It happened in the spur of the moment. But I am waiting to hear what a full investigation is, because people are supposed to be trained to stay calm. I'm not sure what immediate danger she saw herself in so that she had to react so suddenly and errantly. But all of that, I suppose, will come up during an investigation. But, you know, my first thoughts is that it's just a tragedy all the way around.
Well, and we'll just, you know, keep watching and questioning, right?
Right.
Let's look at the infrastructure plan, lead pipes. This plan would eliminate all lead pipes and service lines in drinking water systems nationwide. If that were accomplished, what would it mean for Milwaukee, your region?
Listen, let me just tell you, we have 70,000 service lines that need to be replaced. and we've been replacing them at a rate of 1,000 a year based on our financial ability. That, do the math, Kate. That's 70 years.
Generations.
Before we'd be able to get rid of all these lead pipes. I mean, you know, I'm buying water right now because I have a great-granddaughter who lives in a house where they have these old service lines, and she's only 3 years old. I'm buying water. And that's an unsustainable plan for most people. We have, my friend Dan Kildee loves to drop the F-bomb, use the F-word, Flint, on the other side of the lake. But the reality is that children in Milwaukee are being poisoned at a rate of about 0.1% less than those children in Flint. This is a problem not only in lead pipes, but lead paint. And, of course, pediatricians, doctors will tell you that this causes some cognitive disabilities. And they have even started studying the presence of lead as being a source of violent behavior. So this is a serious public health risk. It's not as sexy as, you know, building a new condominiums or new other things, but this is absolutely essential infrastructure.
Now, you know, President Biden has been going around the country talking about this infrastructure plan. Do you have any details or any type of timeline as to how these pipes and service lines would be replaced, how this would roll out?
Well, listen, let me tell you, I am not as worried about the timeline and how it would roll out. Because, again, Kate, it will be 70 years before we could replace them at the rate that we're going. I think, number one, we've got to get the appropriation done. It's a $2 trillion package. There's a lot of resistance from Republicans and even some Democrats with the size of the package. With number two, with the quote-unquote definition of infrastructure, there are many people who want to restrict the definition of infrastructure to roads and bridges, and that's it. And thirdly, there's resistance just based on Republicans not wanting the president to be successful. This is a I was so excited to be able to talk to you about this, because just the prospect of getting rid of these lead laterals really elevates my mood. And I laugh when I think about my encounter with Tom Barrett. I think his feet have not touched the ground since. He heard about this package.
Well, you know, you say that, you know, House Democrats have very little wiggle room here. Your chamber came back from recess today with a slimmer majority, razor thin. How do you see Speaker Pelosi keeping members united around this plan, especially with a wing of progressives and moderates who want action on climate change, who want action on elder care, racial justice, all of this amid, you know, a raging pandemic?
Well, that's the difference between governing and being an opposition party. I've heard some of our members say this package, the $2 trillion package, is nothing. We need it to be $10 trillion. I've talked with many advocates in my district, you know, who come up with a $10 trillion number. And we may need $10 trillion, but we need $2 trillion right now. You have to start somewhere, and I think our challenge is to get to the front door with these proposals. I think everybody has bad infrastructure in their district. Maybe not everybody, but some of the people that we need to convince have rural areas that need. More than just these water mains, but they need broadband, other kinds of infrastructure that's in this package. And, you know, the president, I think, is probably very hopeful that he can appeal to people's constituent needs as opposed to their partisan identity. You know, Joe Biden has been a member of the Senate for many, many years. He knows the Senate. He has some relationships. And I would put my money on Joe Biden being able to pry loose a few votes out of Republicans and being able to convince Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema that bipartisanship doesn't mean you have to have the entire Republican caucus go along with you.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who represents Wisconsin's 4th District. You can join in on the Biden administration's infrastructure plan. What initiatives do you support? Do you have concerns about the plan and how it's paid for? 800-642-1234. Let's look at the money. The business lobby is speaking out, saying that raising the corporate tax rate would harm hiring, would harm wages, U.S. competitiveness. They're saying it would also slow down pandemic recovery. How do you feel about a sharp rise in corporate taxes to pay for this massive infrastructure spending proposal?
Well, first of all, let's just put it this way. It's not a spending proposal. It's an investment proposal. And it's a proposal that all of them benefit from. You know, when Amazon rolls down the street with your package, they're doing it on roads that the taxpayers bill. And UPS and all these private companies benefit from the infrastructure package. That's number one. I mean, and number two, their press release indicating that they object to it was written like 100 years ago. They always object to paying any kind of corporate tax. And, of course, I don't want to pick on Amazon. I'm a customer. But they paid zero taxes. And number three, the most important thing is that when we were considering the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, I'm a member of the Committee on Ways and Means. Most corporations were hoping and praying that that they'd get a 28% tax cut from where it was. Nobody thought it would ever be 21%. I mean, these corporations were as surprised as anyone when former President Trump walked in the room and just said, make it 21%. It wasn't based on anything that was actuarial or scientific or connected to business loss. And I think a lot of these companies are being greedy. I mean, if you ask them, they never, ever, ever thought that they'd have a 21% tax rate. And there are international implications for this too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we don't rein in corporate tax profits internationally, if people don't do it across the globe, we will continue to have unaffordable increasing income inequality among people. We've got to rein it in. And we need this money to improve our infrastructure and to invest in our economies. They need it in Germany. They need it in England. They need it in France. Corporate taxation is a respectable way to provide for its citizenry because the corporations absolutely benefit from the customers that they have here in the United States and internationally.
We're looking at the global implications here with U.S. Representative Gwen Moore as we explore this $2 trillion infrastructure package that President Biden unveiled late last month. How do you think the plan would help infrastructure right here in Wisconsin? Do you think it will get bipartisan support? Some think it's too big, Congresswoman Gwen Moore said. Others think it's way too small. Where do you stand? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Congresswoman Gwen Moore about the Biden administration's $2 trillion infrastructure plan as negotiations kick off on Capitol Hill. The president called the bill a once-in-a-generation investment in America when he unveiled it last month. And Representative Moore is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Eve now, who's joining us from Oconomowoc. Hi, Eve.
Kate Archer Kent, I'm so happy to talk to you and Congresswoman Moore. My question is, I understand the infrastructure amount and things like that, but I'm kind of interested, being raised and born and grew up in Milwaukee, how we are going to fix some of the lead pipe issues that are coming up. There's a lot of construction going on, and I get that. Are those the homes that are going to be chosen to get new pipes and things like that? I mean, how is that plan going to play out? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Eve.
Good morning, Eve. Well, thank you so much. You know, the devil is always in the details, isn't it? You know, and right now we're picking and choosing houses that are to be fixed because we only have the capacity to fix 1,000 a year out of the, 73,000 lead laterals that we have. I think that this bill will give us the greater capacity. Not only will it give us greater capacity, but I think it will give us an opportunity to use some workforce development strategies, which are also part of this plan, to really give people who don't have a job or limited job an opportunity to learn how to do some of this work and to recruit them and give them good paying jobs as a result of it. So I think that we can increase the workforce and eliminate the sort of Hunger Games strategy of who will get the lead laterals replaced and to have a greater equity with regard to that. And it's not just the pipes that we're talking about. You know, we're talking, you know, Eve mentioned something about housing as well. I mean, this plan, housing is infrastructure too. And we have a lot of problems with lack of affordable housing, available housing, houses. And we got, you know, about 327,000 renters in Wisconsin who spend more than 30% of their income on rent. And so, you know, this package invests over $200 billion to increase housing supply and address the affordable housing crisis. That is so exciting to me.
And you mentioned, too, broadband. $100 billion would be set aside for broadband and creating more affordable, equitable internet. You know, Wisconsin, as you know, has huge challenges expanding broadband. Would this plan solve our problems here in Wisconsin with broadband?
Well, you know, we've got about 14% of Wisconsin residents who live in an area where there's just absolutely no broadband infrastructure. And then 69% of us live in an area where there's only one provider, you know, breaking down the competitiveness and, of course, increasing the price and making it too expensive. So this $100 billion, again, is going to help us with the kind of equity that we need. I mean, right now, broadband is the quote-unquote yellow bus. Mm-hmm. This pandemic has really demonstrated that the lack of broadband can keep children from learning. But broadband has also been a major service for seniors. We've had telehealth, and telehealth has reached so many people during the pandemic, especially our seniors. And I don't think that it's something that's going to go away once the pandemic is over, because it has been such a great utility for intervening in people's health crises before they end up in an emergency room. And so broadband is no longer a luxury. It's not just getting on to play video games or something. It's connected with learning. It's connected with health. And again, it's an investment that will pay for itself 20 times over.
Well, let's bring in John from Eau Claire. John, you're on with Congresswoman Gwen Moore. Go ahead.
Thank you. I don't know anyone who thinks that infrastructure is only roads and bridges. but I also don't know anyone who thinks that child care or battery charging stations for electric cars that nobody wants is infrastructure.
Okay.
Well, I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's fair that you believe that, and I guess I don't want to be nasty, but child care, the cost of child care, it costs as much as tuition at college, university. Child care is a serious impediment to women participating in the workforce. It's again, we're talking about equity. You know, as someone who raised three kids, and you know, I have three grandchildren and two great grandchildren. This is a major budget item in a family's budget. Most of the people who have lost their jobs during this pandemic have been women. I don't know the number right off the top of my head, but it's into the millions of women who have left the workforce primarily because they don't have child care. School was out. They don't have child care. And the workforce for child care is often unpaid relatives or underpaid people, really putting the health and safety and risk of children at risk, the health and safety at risk. Again, this is an infrastructure improvement. We now know that birth through three is where it's at in terms of teaching our children, that they need some exposure to education long before age six, before kindergarten. Preschool, child care, all of these things will really advance our children's progress. You know, I just want to remind the caller that the United States has only 5% of the world's population. You know, and what that means is that creating an intelligent, educated workforce is our only way to stay relevant in the world. We're not going to be supplying the world with widgets. We can only supply them with as we have done for generations, with being the smartest people on the planet. And that starts long before you get your scholarship to go to Harvard.
So caregiving, you see, is a direct line to infrastructure and having that workforce in order to be able to have that economy that we want. You know, in the couple seconds we have left, Congresswoman, President Biden talks a big gain on this American Jobs Plan. Will he get it through?
Well, from your lips to God's ears, again, you know, if anybody can do it, it'll be Joe Biden. He has to leverage a couple of those votes out of Republicans. I think I'm not going to say who I think he can get, but there people do have, constituents have needs. Mm. And again, as you've noted, Kate, the public is wild about this idea. And the only objection seems to be coming from people who are elected. That's where we have to move them.
Congresswoman Moore, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's always so great. Call me again, Kate.
Gwen Moore is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District, served in the House since 2005. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.